This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Yes.
Excellent. Tell us again your name for the record, just so, and spell the last name. All right, and you're going to have to speak a little slower, only because of the, you know, the microphone. Okay. Tell us your background, sir. I know you're a physician. Tell us your educational background and your work history.
I am a forensic psychiatrist, and I received a bachelor's degree in psychology in 1959. And a medical degree in 1963, both from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. I then had a one-month internship in a military hospital in Texas, and then I came back to University Hospital for Cleveland, where I completed my residency in psychiatry.
And do you have... Go further? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Would you like me to continue?
You can continue. I interrupted. I apologize.
Yeah. I have remained at Case Western Reserve University as a full professor. And I've also become interested in forensic psychiatry. That is, that aspect of psychiatry which relates to legal issues, such as this case. And I initiated a fellowship in forensic psychiatry in 1979 and directed that for 40 years. I also served as director of the Court Psychiatric Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio for over 40 years.
Doctor, do you have board certifications as well?
Yes, I'm board certified in psychiatry, 1971. And board certified in forensic psychiatry, 1979.
Did you also have added qualifications in forensic psychiatry in 2014, 2024, and recertifications?
Yes.
And have you, without going through them, also had a number of visiting professorships?
Yes, I've had about 14 visiting professorships.
Now, Doctor, this case involves what I guess is referred to as filicide, F-I-L-L-I-C-I-D-E, I believe. Did I spell that right?
Single L.
Single L, okay. Can you tell the jurors what that means?
Now, filicide is a parent killing a child. And it is a relatively infrequent phenomenon that occurs in the United States somewhere between 400 and 500 times a year.
And, Doctor, is it fair to say that you have, at least in the country, if not outside the country, the most experience in working on filicide cases?
I believe that's true. I have been personally involved in, I'd estimate, about 80 cases where I was asked to evaluate mothers and fathers who had killed their children.
And a question that I have, Doctor, is have you had occasion to work on cases that found themselves in court where you gave testimony either for the government or for the defense?
Yes, I have.
Let me just go through so we can cut to the chase. Did you work as an expert on the case of Jeffrey Dahmer?
Yes, I consulted with the prosecution in that case.
Did you also work on the case of what is referred to as the Unabomber, a fellow by the name of Kaczynski?
Yes, I was also a consultant to the government on that case.
Did you also find yourself consulting on the matter of, in Florida, the Commonwealth versus or the state versus Casey Anthony?
I was a consultant to the defense in that case, but I could not be helped.
Did you also work on the matter of Andrea Yates?
Yes, I testified for the defense in both of her trials.
Did you also work on the case of what is known as the Aurora movie theater shooting?
Yes, I was a consultant to the prosecutor in that case.
Did you also work on the case involving the Oklahoma City bombing courthouse?
Yes. Again, I was employed by the government in that case.
And in addition to those cases, did you also, in your practice, consult with the defense as well as the prosecution on a number of homicide cases, many of which involve filicide?
Yes, I have.
All right. In the course of this case, sir, did I reach out to you and ask if you would assist me in evaluating Lindsey Clancy?
Yes, you did.
And can you tell the jurors when and for how long you would actually interview, whether it would be Lindsey, whether it would be third-party contacts? Just give us an idea as to how you evaluated her.
Yes, about 4 months after the crime, I did a personal evaluation of Lindsey and her parents to gain information. And I spent 3 hours interviewing her on that date.
And how long did you spend interviewing third-party contacts of her parents?
An hour and 50 minutes.
And this would be in May of 2023?
That's right.
Where did the interview take place?
The interview took place at Duxbury Hospital.
Would that be, is that a hospital facility that's a mental institution in the town or city of Tewksbury?
Tewksbury, yes.
And Lindsey actually came and was living in Duxbury at the time of the incident, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So can you describe for us, without getting into any statements that she made to you, tell us about the circumstances. How did she appear to you physically, and how was she able to answer your questions? Just tell us what her appearance was, her mood.
Yes. Well, first of all, at the time, of course, she had suffered major injury and was paralyzed, so that was the setting. So during the examination, she did not have control of the lower part of her body. During the interview, she appeared somewhat matter of fact, but at the time she was still grieving. The nurses told me that she was crying daily about the loss of her 3 children. And she was also medicated at that time. She was fully cooperative and gave me a detailed account of her recollections of the critical events.
Did you make an observation of her affect? Did she appear to have what you refer to as a flat affect?
Yes, she did have, or I would call it a blunted affect. That is, her emotions were not as you would expect. Her feeling tone was muted.
Muted? Is that what you said, muted?
Muted.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, Doctor, in the course of evaluating this case, and again, in the interest of time, would you agree that you had a chance to review a number of items to assist you in your evaluation?
I reviewed extensive records in this case, both records referring to Ms. Clancy's mental illness, how it developed, who her treaters were, and then also I was able to evaluate records after her conduct.
And that would include police reports?
Extensive police reports, yes.
Grand jury testimony?
Yes.
Photographs?
Yes.
Videos?
Yes.
Medical records from healthcare providers such as Dr. Tufts, nurse practitioner Gelada, and McLean Hospital?
Yes.
Were you aware that she had also contacted suicide hotlines and went to a facility in Rhode Island, Women and Infants?
Yes, I reviewed all those records.
So with all of that information, Doctor, that you had access to, did you also have the opportunity to review any records from, let's say, the government's doctors, Dr. Helbrun, Dr. Mack, Dr. Satoff?
Yes, after I prepared my report, I was aware that there were three experts employed by the prosecution, and I was able to review their reports in detail.
Okay. And your report is actually dated, you saw her in 2023, and you prepared your report ultimately after your evaluation in September. Do you know when the government's doctor's reports were available to you? Was that recently?
My recollection is that they did their evaluation about 3 years after the crime, and I had the opportunity to see her 4 months after the crime.
Now, did you also have occasion, sir, to see from Dr. Helbrun, government's doctor, psychiatric testing?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell us, for example, was one of the results on the psychiatric testing, a test that he administered for the government called the MMPI, or Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory Test?
That was a psychological test that he administered, yes.
And do you recall from reviewing the records what the results were? Was she faking, was she lying, or was she telling the truth?
Okay. The results showed no evidence for faking.
Hold on.
Okay, Doctor, I had asked you if you were aware that government's Dr. Helbrun had administered the MMPI test and came to a conclusion as to whether or not Lindsay was telling the truth, faking, or exaggerating symptoms, and you relied on that test as a portion of your opinion. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell the jurors what the results of that test were to your knowledge?
The in summary, the results were that Lindsay Clancy had a tendency to minimize and did not have a tendency to exaggerate what she was saying and her own symptoms.
Did it also indicate that she was not, I think the terminology is faking or lying in her answers, but in fact was being truthful as best she could be?
Yes, although the test is a little more specific about symptoms rather than lying or not lying, but it did not suggest any evidence of faking symptoms.
Okay, and I'm sorry, that broke up. It did not suggest any evidence of what?
No evidence of faking psychiatric symptoms.
And then finally, one of the scales in that test is referred to as the K, I think, from the books, the K scale or the lie scale. Is that correct?
Yes, that was not elevated.
Not elevated. Okay. Now, Doctor, in your experience, do you have any particular subspecialty or interest in the concept of people that are malingering or faking in the forensic world? In other words, if it's a criminal case, if it's a workman's comp case where somebody's pretending their back hurts, things of that nature, have you focused on that as a subspecialty or interest in your career?
That has been a major interest. I've actually written 46 articles or book chapters in this area. The first was 1984, and over the course of that, of course, new research comes out. So when I write a new edition of a book chapter, it would incorporate new material. So even though the chapter may go through five editions in a particular book, they are they're up to date, and the ones which were written earlier would no longer be the best basis for forming an opinion.
Now, for example, when you reviewed Dr. Helbrin's report for the government, did he refer to your articles?
He did refer to my research, yes.
And was that updated research or was it old research that he referenced?
He referenced older research.
So can you tell us, Doctor, when you consider when you reviewed Lindsay's medical records, you also reviewed the psychopharmacology, in other words, the medications that Dr. Tufts and Gelada and all of these other doctors had prescribed to her during that period of time?
Yes, I did.
And have in mind your interview, the time that you spent with her directly reviewing all of the documents, all of the medical records, everything that we've talked about. And you're also aware from her, not specifically what she said to you, but you're aware of the circumstances from her recollection as to the killings that she told you. Is that correct?
Yes, as well as the journal she kept and other evidence of her thinking and symptoms as the time approached for the crime on January 24th, 2023.
Okay, and you were also aware of her access to her cell phone, doing Google searches and looking up medications during that period of October, November, December, and January. You're aware of that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and can you tell the jurors, in your opinion, sir, with your years of experience in the issue of filicide, working for just the government on a number of cases and the defense, and your evaluation of Lindsay, can you tell this jury your opinion as to whether or not at the time of the killings that she was suffering from a disease or defect that impaired her ability to substantially appreciate and or conform her conduct to the requirements of the law?
Well, sure. Let me begin with the issue of whether she had a mental disease or a defect. Ms. Clancy had a severe depression. There is a book called the DSM, or Diagnostic Manual, prepared by the American Psychiatric Association, which lists criteria for various diseases. So in the diagnostic manual, for example, there are one needs to have five out of nine symptoms to make a diagnosis of major depression. And Ms. Clancy, as she approached the date of the crime, actually had seven of the nine symptoms and was severely depressed. So that in addition to that, she had some earlier evidence of what's called a mild mania, and that fits together in what's called bipolar 2. So in other words, it's a type of bipolar illness where there is more frank depression, severe depression, but the manic aspects are not as severe. So my final diagnosis of her was called bipolar 2 with a severe depression on January 24, 2023, and from reading the reports of all the experts that are that will be testifying, no one failed to diagnose a major mental disease on the day of the crime.
Now, Doctor, in the course of that diagnosis, have you considered the concept of postpartum depression and or postpartum psychosis?
Yes.
And can you tell the jurors how
first
that...
First of all...
I'm sorry. Can you tell the jurors how that factors into your diagnosis and opinion?
Yes. Ms. Clancy had a history of anxiety and difficulty with each of her children. It was minor with her first child, more significant with her second child, and on the occasion of Callan's birth, things went well for the first 3 months, but then Ms. Clancy became very anxious and depressed, and it took quite a toll on her. And I believe the jury has heard from various treaters, such as Dr. Tufts and Nurse Gelada and others, and her own anguish about how depressed she was, where she actually felt she couldn't function, her brain was damaged, she would never be the same. She definitely met the definition of a major depression as well as this bipolar phenomena. Now, with respect to the postpartum aspect, since Ms. Clancy's symptoms began within 3 months of Callan's birth, that would be considered a postpartum onset. Then, of course, she had considerable difficulty over the next 5 months. And at the time of the crime itself, on January 24, 2023, Ms. Clancy was frankly psychotic. So in that sense, she had a postpartum psychosis. It's actually not frequent to have a postpartum psychosis 8 months after a birth, but it does occasionally occur. And so what I can say is whether it is the classic postpartum psychosis or not, with the postpartum onset and Frank's psychosis on the day of the killing, I would label that a postpartum psychosis in the sense that it was a postpartum onset and she was clearly psychotic on that day.
Doctor, when a person is psychotic or involved in having a psychosis, in your opinion, are they able to appear normal, quote-unquote, communicate with people, drive a car, things of that nature?
Well, let me say there that Ms. Clancy herself did her best to not reveal the extent of her depression. She was frank with members of her own family. Her sister, her mother-in-law were aware of how anguished and depressed she was. But with more casual friends, she tended not to show the extent of her depression. I'm not suggesting that she was, although psychosis can indeed wax and wane. For example, on the day of the crime, I'm not suggesting that she was frankly psychotic every minute. She was functioning. In fact, she said she was having a better day than other days. And she actually went out and made a snowman with the kids, visited with took Cora to a doctor for the 5th birthday checkup and was functioning at a level that was not frankly psychotic until she had a command hallucination while her husband, Patrick, was out doing a couple of chores.
And can you tell us, Doctor, what, in your opinion, what a command hallucination is and how it fits, if you will, in a diagnosis of psychosis?
Yes. If we take, first of all, a hallucination is simply hearing a voice, and the voice can be benign or it can be more malignant. So a voice may just simply say, open the window. About one-third of voices are called command hallucinations. That is an instruction to do something. And the majority of those commands are benign. So it might be open a window, get a glass of water. It might be something much more ominous, such as to kill oneself or harm someone else. Those are dangerous command hallucinations. Now, in Ms. Clancy's case, she had not only a command hallucination on the day that she killed her children, she had what is known as a delusion of influence. That is, not only did she hear a command, but she felt that her body was taken over by an external force where she was in a dream state and did not have control of her own body. It was almost like she was a puppet and someone else was pulling the strings.
Yeah. Yeah, hold on a second. Counsel? Mims of the Jew, I want to give you an instruction at this point. I'm going to go into this also a little bit later when I give you the full instructions at the end of the case. But you were not to consider the defendant's statements to any psychiatrist or psychologist as establishing the truth of any facts that are contained in that sentence, in those statements. All right. The defendant's statements to any psychiatrist or psychologist for purposes of evaluation cannot be considered by you as evidence of premeditation, extreme atrocity, or cruelty, or specific intent to kill. Such statements are admissible only as they relate to the basis for the doctor's opinion of the defendant's mental condition. All right, and I'll go into that a little bit later. Okay? Go ahead. Mr. Rent.
So, Doctor, to conclude, would you relate your opinion as it relates to the standard of a person being lacking criminal responsibility at the time of the commission of a crime in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Well, there are two arms to the test for criminal responsibility. One has to do the defendant's ability to control their conduct, and the other has to do with their knowledge of the wrongfulness of their acts. I'd like to address each of those separately, if I may.
Sure.
With regard to my opinion is that Ms. Clancy was, due to her mental disease, unable to conform her conduct both to the requirements of the law on the day that she took the lives of her children. And let me give you the basis of that opinion. First of all, she was hearing a voice which was commanding her to engage in the killing behavior. And she did not feel any sense of control. She felt that she had to obey the instructions she was receiving. It was a matter where she was just following the command rather than being able to make any decision to do it or not. And, for example, uh, I ask his Clancy.
No, you can't say what you talked to. Doctor, you can't. You cannot say what she told you, all right?
Okay. All right. I will not do that. I'm just make sure I'm covering other aspects of Earth. The second evidence that she was lacking control is the fact that she made a severe suicide attempt, also based on the command hallucination that she heard that day, so that she not only cut her throat and jumped out of the window, she very much wanted to die. In my research on women who kill their children, I've divided the motives into five categories, and I want to look at how Ms. Clancy to those motives.
So tell us the five categories.
Yeah, the five categories are, first, altruistic filicide.
What does that
Secondly,
mean? What does that mean, altruistic filicide?
Altruistic filicide occurs when a murder is committed out of love rather than hostility. It is an effort on a mother's part to do what is best for the child. They may believe the child is, they may have a delusional belief the child is about to be tortured in their delusional mind, and they take their life in doing what they believe is in the best interest of the children based on their delusional idea. Altruistic filicide also occurs when a mother may plan to take her own life, and in her psychotic thinking and severe depression, it is distorted, and she may believe that the child will be worse off if she remains alive. So, for example, in Ms. Clancy's case, she believed that, as the jury has already heard, she was obsessional about caring for her children. She consulted with others at work to try and do exactly what was right for her children. And she believed that if Ms. Clancy took her own life, her children would be in terrible shape. And in her mind, she believed that she would be doing her children a favor by having them go to heaven with her rather than remain on earth without her doing the mothering. Her mind was sort of distorted like that.
Okay. So if you could just tell us the other titles of the other four types that you were referred to. Just tell it without getting into detail if they don't apply to Ms. Clancy.
All right. The second category does apply to Ms. Clancy, and that is called acutely psychotic filicide.
Okay.
And this occurs when someone is frankly psychotic. They may have delusions or hallucinations. They're out of touch with reality, and rather than having any rational motive, they're simply acting on their psychotic beliefs. So those two both apply to Ms. Clancy.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, that's right. Just give us the other three, the captions of them.
The other three which do not apply, one is called child maltreatment, in which a parent may shake the child to death or throw a child against a wall in an abusive manner. The next category is unwanted child, where someone, just for their convenience, the child is a burden, and they kill the child for that motive. And the final motive is spouse revenge filicide. That is, someone hates their spouse so much that they're willing to sacrifice the child as a way to punish the spies. And the three latter categories clearly do not apply to Ms. Clancy. She loved her husband, respected her husband, had a good marriage. She never spanked or ever abused her child, and all of her children were wanted. In fact, she planned to have a fourth child. So those three categories clearly do not apply. If I can explain how the two categories did apply, I've already mentioned that Ms. Clancy believed that the distorted belief that her children would just be miserable, and she could not imagine them continuing to exist and have a decent life without her being there as a mother. And so in that sense, she did what she believed was morally right, even though she understood that ordinarily killing a child is against the law. She believed that she was doing what was right for her children with her distorted, psychotic thinking about the children's need for her. And then with respect to the second category of acutely psychotic, Ms. Clancy was under the influence of a command hallucination and idea of influence, so that at that time, rather than the ability to make a rational decision, she was so in the grip of her psychotic command hallucination and idea of influence that she lacked the capacity to conform her conduct to the requirements of the law.
Okay. And, Doctor, pretty much finally, there's been some questions or allegations that Ms. Clancy did not provide information to her health care providers about her adverse effects of medication that she had been prescribed. Do you agree with that from your review of the medical records, or did she, in fact, tell her health care providers how she felt as a result of what she perceived to be the medications that were prescribed?
It's my opinion of reasonable medical certainty that Ms. Clancy was actually a more sophisticated patient than most, and she was forthcoming in conveying her symptoms. The one area in which she was not fully revealing was the area of when she had an impulse to harm her children, and that was because she had a rational belief that her children may be taken away from her by a social service agency. She had an irrational belief that if she even entered a medical hospital, that her children would be taken away. So that is the one area in which she was not fully forthcoming.
Now, Doctor, in your experience, do you find that many women that are caretakers of children postpartum, after the child is born, that are having these intrusive thoughts and having these dark thoughts, are in fact afraid of reporting them because of that very reason that you're talking about?
Action and sustained.
Yes.
All right. No, you can't. You can't. Yeah, you can't answer that.
Phrase that.
Okay. It's also been mentioned here a couple of times that she hasn't killed herself yet, even though she's in the Tewksbury Hospital. Can you tell the jurors briefly, while she's in the Tewksbury Hospital, what are the circumstances of her confinement and what type of care is being provided to her as it relates to whether or not she, or why she hasn't killed herself yet?
Well, let me see. Indeed, there is evidence of her showing suicidality to such an extent that she is never allowed to be out of the presence of a staff member. Even when I conducted an examination of her, and requested privacy, a staff member had to be present. Her ability to take her life in view of her presence and observation is sick, and she recognizes that, so that the reality is, no matter, she does not want to live at any point, she has no choice but first to live at this time.
Thank you very much, Doctor. You have to answer some questions from the DA. Your Honor, at this point, I would like to, because I'm looking at yeah, 40-page resume, so I'd just offer that if I could.
Any objection?
No objection.
Okay, that may be marked.
Thank you.
Honey?
Yes, please.
Good morning, Dr. Resnick.
Good morning.
In addition to the evaluations that you do, is it true that you've also taught some courses to other forensic psychiatrists and psychologists about how to testify in cases like these?
Yes, I have.
And you teach them how to answer questions and how to dress and how to appear believable and trustworthy, correct?
That's correct.
And in one of your trainings, excuse me, do's and don'ts of depositions by Dr. Philip Resnick, in your course description, you state information beyond the question should not be volunteered because it will open up new areas for questioning, provide ammunition for attacks, eliminate the opportunity for surprise, and information fails to get to the jury, correct?
That's correct.
So you teach other psychologists how to hold back information in the discovery process to surprise the other side.
No, that's not it. And I'm not a psychologist.
Now, a woman who kills her child can have more than one motive, correct?
Yes.
And actually, the most common motive for women who kill their children is fatal maltreatment or child abuse, correct?
That's correct.
And in fact, most women who kill their kids don't do it due to mental illness, correct?
That's correct.
And in fact, there's a quote from you in an article, Child Murdered by Mothers, Patterns and Prevention, where you say, quote, more filicides occur due to fatal maltreatment than because of maternal psychiatric illness, correct?
Correct.
You also have written about parents having significant emotional devastation after killing their children, correct?
Yes.
And in fact, you've written in... It's a chapter 6 of Family Murder, Child Murder by Parents, in the aftermath section, you've written, quote, these life events are likely to prolong the parents' depression. The anniversary of the children's deaths and exposure to things that remind the parent of it are likely to be upsetting, correct?
Yes.
Things like birthdays and holidays and the anniversary of the killings would all be something that would be upsetting, correct?
They sometimes are, yes.
Now, you've written a lot about malingered psychosis, correct?
Yes.
And malingering psychosis, you can have a mental illness, and your malingering could be exaggerating those symptoms or saying you have psychosis symptoms when you don't, correct?
That's correct.
And one of the things that you have written, and there's an article that you wrote called Faking It, you've written in here, quote, command auditory hallucinations are easy to fabricate. Persons experiencing genuine command hallucinations do not always obey the voices, especially if doing so would be dangerous, correct?
That's correct.
You've also given some points to other practitioners. If you, quote, if you suspect a person of malingered auditory hallucination, ask what he or she does to make the voices go away or diminish in intensity, correct?
Yes.
Because typically someone who hears a voice telling them to do something horrible like kill their child will try to resist that voice initially, correct?
That there are variabilities, some do and some don't.
And in fact, the case you mentioned earlier, Andrea Yates, Miss Yates, in fact, committed herself to a hospital 5 times and tried to kill herself twice, all while trying to not kill her children, correct?
Yes.
She had heard voices for months and telling her to kill her children. And to resist those voices, she actually tried to kill herself, correct?
Until she could no longer resist the voices, yes.
Right. But she tried.
Right, as did Ms. Clancy.
Well, according to the records and reports that we have that are in evidence, Ms. Clancy heard the voice and immediately acted, correct? According to those records? Is that correct?
Well, Ms. Clancy had impulses to harm her children, which she did resist until the command hallucination when she was overwhelmed, yes.
But according to the records and the testimony that we've had, she had an impulse in December, 1 time, to harm her children, correct?
I believe it was on 2 occasions that she mentioned it to her husband.
And then never again after that until her kids were killed, correct?
There were only 2 occasions she mentioned it, but she referred to having these horrible impulses. So that suggests to me she was dealing with it on an ongoing basis, although she mentioned it only twice to her husband.
But she never said she had thoughts to kill her children. She said she had thoughts to harm her children, correct?
Yes, but actually, I think it's clear that to harm her children was to kill her children.
Well, in the records where you say that she was so clear in presenting her symptoms to her doctors, she repeatedly was asked if she had any homicidal ideation, and she repeatedly said no, correct?
That's right, and she didn't in the initial parts of her treatment. But by late December and January is when she did have those impulses.
But what
and she
told
did not
her,
acknowledge them.
But what she told
she did
her
not
doctors,
acknowledge them to her doctors.
What she told her doctors in December is that she had no homicidal ideation. She only reported suicidal ideation, correct?
Yes, and as noted, that's very common because people fear their children will be taken away.
So it's better to kill them than to have them taken away.
The state.
You know, it's not better to kill them
on,
than to have them taken away.
That question is strict and that answer is strict. Okay.
You say that she was very forthcoming in her symptoms to her medical providers, but she never told those medical providers that she had an impulse to harm her children, correct?
That's correct.
You also, in teaching people about malingering, about faking hearing voices or being psychotic, you give pointers of what people should look for, such as patient uses no strategies to diminish hallucinations. Patient states he obeys all commands. Correct?
Yes.
You also, in a podcast, evidence entitled Identifying Malingering with Dr. Philip Resnick, you were asked about malingering and you said, and asked about hearing voices, and you said, quote, so a common example I'll use in teaching is if you hear a voice out of the blue that says, kill your mother, your moral fiber would cause you to hesitate. But if you have concurrent delusion that your mother is an evil wizard, you're more likely to act on that command hallucination, correct?
Correct.
And there's no evidence in the records or in the testimony that we've had thus far that Ms. Clancy believed that her children were evil or that they were possessed or that there was any danger posed by them or to them by such forces, correct?
Instead, Ms. Clancy.
Well, it's a yes or no question, doctor.
No, go ahead. You can answer that.
Instead, Ms. Clancy had the dichotic, distorted belief that her children would be better off in heaven rather than being motherless. So that was her psychotic distortion, coupled with the command hallucination. So she missed the exact requirement you're referring to.
And you believe that that was her psychotic delusion, that they would be better off without her, better off in heaven without her, because according to your report, you could figure out no rational, non-psychotic motive for her to kill her children, correct?
Yes.
And so just because you can't figure out a motive or you don't know a motive or the person doesn't tell you a motive doesn't mean that there actually isn't a motive, correct?
There was a motive.
But that's not what I asked you. I did not ask you about Ms. Clancy. I said just because someone tells you that they don't have a motive or you can't figure out a motive doesn't mean they didn't actually have a motive, correct? You also state in another article identifying malingering with Dr. Philip Resnick, you point out that the rapid resolution of symptoms with medication can be a red flag, as genuine psychotic symptoms usually take longer to subside, correct?
Oh, that's correct.
Were you aware from the Tewksbury records that on page 1136, it says Ms. Clancy has been clinically stable since her admission. There have been no events of affective, cognitive, or behavioral instability since her admission. And that Ms. Clancy has not evidenced any challenges in accepting and conforming to the rules and standards. Did you review that note?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay. Were you also aware on page 1168 that it says Ms. Clancy denies that she has ever experienced hallucinatory content prior to or since that event, referring to when she killed her children, correct?
Yes.
And you're aware on page 1170, it states, Ms. Clancy presents with intact reality testing and no observable symptoms of psychosis. She's actively engaged in treatment. She's able to identify possible hopes for her future, including serving as an activist for postpartum psychosis awareness and participating in a wheelchair marathon. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
I move to submit these three sections as the next three exhibits.
All right. Any objection?
No.
All right. Are those part of the Tewksbury records that are already in?
Yes.
Okay. Those may be admitted.
Doctor, you mentioned that when you interviewed Ms. Clancy, you spoke to some nurses who told you she had been crying every day, correct?
Yes.
Are you aware that in the Tewksbury records, in the one-to-one notes of people who watched her every minute of every day, there's no record of her crying every day?
Well, when I saw her at 4 months, I'm not sure how long had she been at Tewksbury? I'm not aware of that note. But my recollection is that she was observed crying.
But there's no record of her crying at Tewksbury every day, correct?
I have no knowledge of it.
And you mentioned that during the interview, not getting into anything that she said, but her affect, her expressions, her emotions, you said that they were flat and blunted, correct?
Yes.
Do you remember the portions of the video where she smiled and laughed?
Are you talking about the video of my interview?
What was that?
Are you talking about the videotape of my interview?
Yes. Yes, at the end of the video, do you recall her smiling and laughing?
So does that open up the video?
This is affect and behavior.
That's an issue we could talk about over here. And probably something best raised on cross.
Okay.
I mean, on redirect, I'm sorry.
And just getting into her affect and behavior, doctor.
Yes. That's not inconsistent with her affect throughout the interview, especially, for example, in talking about...
Well, not getting into what she talked about, doctor. I'm not asking anything about what she talked about, just her expressions and her affect. Now, you mentioned that the Commonwealth expert saw Ms. Clancy 3 years after you examined her, correct?
I said it was 3 years after the crime.
Okay. And you're aware that the Commonwealth was not permitted to interview Ms. Clancy until after defense had filed a notice of their defense and we'd been given permission by the court to have our experts interview her, correct?
Yes.
And you're aware that did not occur until approximately 2.5 years after the incident, correct?
Yes.
Now, you mentioned that postpartum psychosis doesn't typically happen 8 months after a child's born, correct?
Yes.
In fact, typically, it's within 4 weeks of a child being born, correct?
Most often, yes.
And you mentioned that her postpartum, Ms. Clancy's postpartum symptoms began within that three-month time frame of postpartum. Do symptoms have to occur within that three-month period to be postpartum?
Well, there's a wide range of definitions of postpartum. Some scholars in the area make it the whole first year, others 3 months, others 4 weeks.
And in fact, her seeking help from a psychiatrist happened in September, which would have been 4 months after she gave birth, correct?
Correct.
You mentioned that Ms. Clancy was able to hide her symptoms of depression from her friends, that she was open with some people, but she was able to hide those symptoms from friends and other people she interacted with, correct?
Yes, hide her, the depths of her depression.
And so she was able to control and conform her behavior to situations in which she did not want to show people how she was feeling, correct?
Sure, very common.
Now, you wrote in your report on page 24 that Ms. Clancy had paranoid beliefs that her children would be taken away from her if anyone knew what she was going through, correct?
Yes.
But that's actually a rational belief, is it not, that if someone knows you want to harm your children, they might be taken away?
It can be rational, but it was more... approached irrational in her case rather than rational.
I have nothing further.
Your redirect. Bless you.
No, thank you, doctor.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code podcast15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.